Proverbs chapter 22. Let me turn in there. Proverbs 22. Appreciate you not leaving in the break. An encouragement to me. Appreciate those of you that weren't able to make it to the first session. Appreciate you being here now. As we talked about the need to grow up, I think one thing that that is important is friendship. I wrote the title to this lesson, Solving the Problem of Friendship. And I sent it in, and then I regretted putting that as the title, because is friendship a problem? Because you could read it that way, to say, I've got a problem of having friends, I don't need any. But that wasn't my intent, so if you thought that that's the way that I meant the title, that is not it. Certainly there is a certain attribute of friendship that we need to be concerned with in our lives, because we let friends in and they have such a great influence on us. And that's the point that we want to be making this morning. How to choose friends, what kind of friends we want to have. And I mentioned last night in our introductory lesson that I want you to leave here with practical applications. So if you can leave knowing that it's from our lesson before that you need to quit pouting, great, then we've accomplished something. If we can say we need to be sure that we're not self-glorifying and worrying about being boastful, then we've made some practical applications. That's all I want to do with us as we study about friends. I'm impressed upon the young people that make friends and are well at doing that and are good at talking with other folks. And you'll often hear it associated, that's my BFF. My best friend forever. If you haven't heard about that, it's an old one, I guess, now. But folks seem to think that we're going to make our friends in about junior high, middle school, high school, and they're going to be our friends forevermore. And I can tell you, I don't talk to anybody that I went to high school with. And I might have been friends with them, but I don't talk to them now at all. Maybe you're that same way. Maybe you still associate with some of those folks that you've known for a long time. It's a blessing to have friends, but it's a bigger blessing, or a better blessing, I guess, to have the right kind of friends in your life. And Solomon, I think, talks about that here in Proverbs 22, in verse 24, where he says, don't associate with a man given to anger, or go with a hot-tempered man. Don't be associating with a person that has this sort of characteristic. And why? The next verse, he says, or you will learn his ways and find a snare for yourself. So you're associating yourself with a person that's hot-tempered, short-tempered, a person that is an angry person. You know what you're going to do when you're around them? You're going to become like that. And it's a snare, it's a trap that is set for you. And you need to be away from that. You know the verse in 1 Corinthians 15:33 where it says, don't be deceived. Bad company corrupts good morals. And we tell our kids that all the time. Don't be deceived. What does that mean? You can be deceived into thinking that it's going to be okay. That you can associate yourself with folks that are of a certain way and it's not going to affect you at all. Don't be deceived, Paul says. Bad company corrupts good morals. Do we simply realize the influence that the people we allow to come into our circle of friends has on us? Do we recognize the influence that is there? And you know what? Something is to be said about the friends that we have that shows through our life as well. We shouldn't base our friend selection based on how much money they have, for example. What does that say about our friends? Well, I'm only friends with you because you've got some money. What does that matter? We shouldn't base our friendship on education or prestige either. You know, I say, I'm friends with this person because they're the mayor of the town. They've got a lot of prestige because of that. That's a horrible reason to have them as a friend. What are some good reasons to have friends? Because we don't want to be deceived in our friendships. I invite you to turn over to our text for this lesson, to 2 Samuel and chapter 13. 2 Samuel 13. Now, the account that's given here, you've got David's son Amnon, and he has a lustful desire for his half-sister Tamar. I want you to notice the first two verses there in 2 Samuel chapter 13. It says, now it was after that Absalom, the son of David, and a beautiful sister's name was Tamar. And Amnon, the son of David, loved her. Amnon was so frustrated because of his sister Tamar that he made himself ill, for she was a virgin, and it seemed hard to Amnon to do anything to her. So he restrains himself. He's got this desire, and he seems hard for him to do anything. It seems to be a sort of restraint that's here in this situation. Notice the next verse. But Amnon had a friend who was named Jonadab, the son of Shimeah, David's brother. And Jonadab was a very shrewd man. What a friend to have. A very shrewd man. It says he's his friend. And the two have a conversation. He said to him, verse 4, O son of the king, why are you so depressed morning after morning? Will you not tell me? Can you tell this about your friends sometimes? You tell when your friends are upset. It doesn't matter how good or bad the friend is, they can tell something about you. Well, he notices this. Why are you upset? Won't you tell me? Then Amnon said to him, I'm in love with Tamar, the sister of my brother Absalom. And so we talk to our friends. We ask questions. We can confide in our friends sometimes. And Amnon's confiding in his friend here, Jonadab. And notice that he opens up, and notice the response in verse 5. Jonadab then said to him, lie down in your bed and pretend to be ill. When your father comes to see you, say to him, please let my sister Tamar come and give me some food to eat, and let her prepare the food in my sight, that I may see it and eat from her hand. Perhaps you know the rest of the story as he goes through with this horrible plan and this horrible act. I find it interesting as you start the text there in verses 1 and 2 that this was a hard thing for him to do, and he goes to his friend, and I can't think of a better time to get some good friendly advice. Something that a good friend could have told him, you need to turn, tuck tail, and run. I mean, nowhere near any of that. But instead, this friend says, let me tell you how to fix this problem. Let me tell you how to give in to this that you're thinking of. And so he does it. He takes and he violates this half-sister. And verse 12 says, she answered him, no, my brother, do not violate me, for such a thing is not done in Israel. Do not do this disgraceful thing. And notice verse 14, he would not listen to her. Oh, he listened to his shrewd friend. He wouldn't listen to her. Since he was stronger than she, he violated her and lay with her. Based upon the advice of a friend. You think our friends can't have influence over us? If Amnon had been more careful in choosing his friends, maybe there would have been a lot of trouble and a lot of sin and a lot of heartache that might have could have been avoided if he'd have been just a little bit more careful in who he allowed into his friend circle. Because there's without a doubt that it was an influence on him and it wasn't for good. Choosing our friends is an essential part of friendship, but we need to take great care in those who we allow to pass that barrier. Certainly we might have to work with someone that may be a shrewd person, but that doesn't mean we have to be their friend. That doesn't mean that we have to invite them over to our house. It doesn't mean that we have to spend time with them. Maybe we may have to work with somebody in that situation. But truly somebody that's a friend. Somebody that when they give us advice, we take that advice. Somebody that we can confide ourselves in. Our friends have influences over us. Look at Matthew chapter 26. Matthew chapter 26. Jesus is praying here in Gethsemane, and He knows that His time is near. He's praying about this. And I want you to notice what happens when Judas and the crowd arrives. In Matthew chapter 26, beginning in verse 46, says, get up, let us be going. Behold, the one who betrays me is at hand. And while he was still speaking, behold, Judas, one of the 12, came up and accompanied by a large crowd with swords and clubs, who came from the chief priests and elders of the people. Now he who was betraying him gave him a sign, saying, whomever I kiss, he is the one, seize him. Immediately Judas went to Jesus and said, hail, Rabbi, and kissed him. And Jesus said to him, friend, do what you have come for. They came and laid hands on Jesus and seized him. Yeah, I always found it interesting as I read through the Gospels that it wasn't the Sadducees, And one of the Pharisees that was there that he called friend, that betrayed him in this way. It was someone that he put in his inner circle. Someone that he allowed in there, and he said it was his friend. He rewards his disciples, if you look in Luke chapter 21, if you'll notice the text there, Luke chapter 21 and verse 16. Luke 21 and verse 16. He says there, "But you will be betrayed even by parents and brothers and relatives and friends. And they will put some of you to death, and you will be hated by all because of my name." You have to be careful about who's in your friend circle. Robert Goodman, who was a preacher, wrote, "I don't think outspoken atheists will keep many from Bible study and worship. But I know friends can and do." Friends can have the influence over us. Friends can keep us from doing a whole host of things in our lives. It can be harmless. Like they can say, "I think you ought to cut your hair this way. Or I think you ought to cut your hair that way." That's pretty relatively harmless to have your friends give you influence such as that. But they may have more influence than that. They may influence the way you talk. They may influence the way you act. They may influence even the things in which you do. Peer pressure and friend encouragement is not something that's just exclusive to the young. It happens to each and every person, no matter how old or young they are. We need to be intentional then about the friends we have and who we allow to influence us. But before we can go any further in this lesson, you've got to answer a very specific question. Would you end a friendship with a person who was detrimental to your faith? Not just, "Well, I won't talk to them as much." I said, end a friendship. Would you be willing, young people, maybe, to stop dating someone if they were detrimental to your faith? You say, "Well, I've got an attraction to them. I like them. I'm friends with them even. I don't know if I could stop dating." Would you be willing to do that if it was detrimental to your faith? Would you be willing to talk to someone no more if it was detrimental to your faith? Would you be willing to sever a relationship as far as possible, exceptions to the marriage and immediate family? Would you be willing to end that relationship if it was detrimental to your faith? We each have to answer that question. We each have to think about our own lives and who we've allowed into our lives as to whether or not we would be willing to do this. Just a few passages to show some of the attributes to this that I'm mentioning. We mentioned last night Matthew chapter 10 and verse 34 through 36, where he mentioned that it would be those that could be enemies of even your own household. "He who loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me," he said. Where do we put it? Because sometimes we put friend relationships so close that we're not willing to give those up, but we'd be willing to give up all sorts of other relationships that we might have. Turn over to James chapter 4 and verse 4. Just notice what James writes in chapter 4 and verse 4 here. He writes, "You adulteresses, do you not know that friendship with the world is hostility toward God? Therefore, whoever wishes to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God." Friend of the world. He's not talking about gardening. He's not talking about, "I'm friendly and I like to grow corn." It's not being a friend of the earth. That's not what he's talking about there. But the relationships you sustain with, the folks and the things and the attributes of culture and society and the sinful actions of some, and maybe even you. You don't be friend with that. You're an enemy of God. There are times when you have to choose a friendship in the world, of the world, a friendship with God, though. It's one of purity. Look in 2 Corinthians chapter 6 to make our point here about this importance of the friends in which we choose. Importance of friends And notice how he puts this, how Paul puts this in 2 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 14, where he says, "Do not be bound together with unbelievers, for what partnership has righteousness and lawlessness, or what fellowship has light and darkness, or what harmony with has Christ with Belial, or what has a believer in common with an unbeliever?" What do you have in common with an unbeliever? What is it that you find neutral between you? Look at verse 17. "Therefore, come out from their midst and be separate, says the Lord. Do not touch what is unclean, and I will welcome you." He's not saying that you can't have a friend that's not a Christian. That's not the point of that. But he's asking a simple question is, what do you have in common with somebody? What do you have in common with somebody that doesn't share your faith? Why are you going to give time to them? Why are you going to give your effort? Why are you going to give of yourself to someone else? And you don't have this very fundamental and foundational basis in your friendship. You don't have that. Why are you engaging with them? Bound together, he says. They go, you go. That's what bound together is, isn't it? Those are the kind of choices that Christians have to make. And we're talking about friendship specifically. Simply just, are you aware of how much influence your friends have over you? It's of great importance to know that. Are you aware of how much influence your friends have over you and your choice to live for Christ or not live for Christ? Are you truly honest with yourself about that? So, what is a good friend? Might be a good place to start our lesson then this morning. What attributes, what characteristics would describe someone that you would let into your friend category that would make them a good friend, even? Someone you would want to be friends with. Well, I got a few attributes that I think of, and I think of good friends. I think of those folks that like to respect God. Look in Ephesians chapter 5 with me. Ephesians chapter 5. I didn't say there that they had to be Christians. I said, but someone that respects God. I want to surround myself with Christians as best I can. But I may have friends who are not yet Christians. I didn't say they weren't. I said they're not yet. I'm not done with them. We're not finished with our friends. You know what? Jesus dined with sinners, didn't he? Folks took issue with that. But you've got to remember his intent in that. Bringing them to him. His intent was not just, well, these are my folks. That wasn't what he was doing. If I have a non-Christian friend who has respect for God, that has no respect for God, I don't need that person in my life. If they have no respect for our Creator, I don't need that kind of negativity, as some folks might say. I don't need that person to be around me. What do I have in common with someone that doesn't have respect for God? What do I have in common with someone that doesn't recognize God? One thing about folks that I don't that don't respect God, nothing seems to bother them more than somebody that does respect God. Why you want to be friends with somebody like that? And so a good characteristic of a friend would be someone that respects God. Ephesians chapter 5, this is how the disciples behave. We have responsibility. Sounds like this in Ephesians 5 and verse 7. It says, "Do not be partakers with them." Verse 11, "Do not participate in the unfruitful deeds of darkness, but instead even expose them. For it is disgraceful even to speak of the things which are done by them in secret. But all things become visible when they are exposed by the light. For everything becomes visible is light." I have a responsibility. When I see sin, I call it sin. Someone that doesn't have a respect for God is not going to call sin, sin. They might have a moral compass of what's right or wrong, and they might even equate it to natural selection. I heard that one time from evolutionists. Right and wrong is a matter of natural selection. What? But if they don't recognize sin for what sin is, I don't need somebody like that in my circle of friends. And you know what? Somebody like that is in my circle of friends. If I'm doing what I ought to be doing as a Christian, as a servant of God, when I see sin, I ought to not shy away from knowing and letting it be known that that's not right. That's sin as well. And I'm going to let myself be surrounded with those type of people. If someone has no respect for God, they don't want to hear when you call something sin. Your friendship will probably take care of itself and sever itself when you call sin what sin is. even if your friend is not a Christian, if they have some respect for God, when you do it, this chapter says, you're building something in them. If they at least recognize that God is Creator, this is His Word, when you recognize and point out the things you ought to do, they have a respect for that. Or at least should, if they respect God. We have friends and experiences of this in our own lives, and we ought to take a stand simply for what's right. And at a minimum, we ought to do it with those who are our friends, at least around us. If you're going to have a friend, you need to have a friend that helps you. And you need to be a friend that helps others. And so a friend, a good friend, must have respect for you. It doesn't mean we're always going to agree on everything. You don't have to have a friend that simply everything's always thumbs up. Even in the Lord's church, there's folks that don't always agree on everything. But we ought to at least have a respect for others. This is something that Jesus reminds us of in Matthew chapter 20 and verse 28. Even as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, seeking to help others. Some people are awful self-centered, and they have a lot of friends, but are their friends truly respecting them? Look in Philippians with me, chapter 2. Philippians chapter 2 and verse 3 kind of exemplifies this. It says, do nothing from selfish or empty conceit, but with humility of mind regard one another as more important than yourselves. Do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also for the interests of others. God respects you. Your friends respect you, and you respect back. You're not focused simply upon yourself, but you're focused on helping others. It's an important attribute of a friend, of a good friend, I might say, that they respect God and they respect you. They also ought to respect themselves. If you're going to let somebody be a friend of yours, you need to let the friend respect themselves. It's not funny for folks that don't care about their own lives. Folks try to make jokes at their own expense. It's not funny. If you do that, I encourage you, quit making jokes at your own expense. I used to do that, and I had to tell myself to stop it. I used to say I was overweight and make jokes about it. It ain't funny. You respect yourself. You be proud of who you are because you're living a life for Christ. And you have respect in and of yourselves. We don't need people in our lives that don't care about their own life. You know what? If they don't care about their own life, they're not respecter of themselves, they're not going to respect you either, are they? They're certainly not going to respect God. They're going to get in trouble because they don't care about their life. You know what? The driver of the getaway car goes to jail with the bank robber. They don't care about themselves, and you're in the circle of friends with them. They don't care about you, and you're going to get in trouble with them. You need to get rid of friends like that. You need to change that. The Bible warns about it. Look in 2 Timothy chapter 3. 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 1. It says, but realize this, in the last days difficult times will come, for men will be lovers of self, lovers of money, boastful, arrogant, revilers, disobedient to parents, ungrateful, unholy, unloving, irreconcilable, malicious gossips, without self-control, brutal, haters of good, treacherous, reckless, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, holding to a form of godliness, although they have denied its power. We may know someone that may have some of these attributes. They don't act and then think about it. They just act. They never think about it. They never think about what they do. They just do it. What does the Bible say about men like this? At the end of verse 5, it says, avoid such men as these. There's plenty of people that don't have any regard for themselves. Plenty of folks out there that don't care about their friends. They don't care about who they're dating, how they treat them, whatever it might be. They're self-serving, no regard for themselves. And we just need to be careful about folks like that. Demand that people that you allow to be around you are people that respect themselves, they respect you, they respect God. So, how do we select these sort of friends to help us? How do we do this? Well, that's of great importance for us as well. They're pursuers of peace. Look there in 1 Peter. 1 Peter chapter 3. 1 Peter chapter 3 and in verse 8. 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 8, it says, "To sum up, all of you be harmonious, sympathetic, brotherly, kind-hearted, and humble in spirit, not returning evil for evil, insult for insult, but giving a blessing instead. For you were called for the very purpose that you might inherit a blessing. For the one who desires life to love and see good days must keep his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking deceit." There's a certain way. I'm going to be around folks. I'm going to watch the way they talk. And I want them to talk in a certain way. I want them to act in a certain way. They're going to keep their tongue from evil and their lips from speaking deceit. Or you know what? I'm not going to let them into my circle of friends. I think about Job. And one thing about Job, let's turn over to Job 19. One thing about Job that I think that sometimes I've overlooked in the past is Job, through all of everything that happened to him, one of the things that I think bothered him in Job 19, you see that his friends were disloyal to him, and I think it really, really hurt him. When you read Job 19 and verse 14, it says, "My relatives have failed, my intimate friends have forgotten me." Notice verse 19, "All my associates abhor me, and those I love have turned against me." I think it really bothered Job about what happened with his friends. Disappointments in a friend come because we have sometimes some unreasonable expectations. But it's certainly reasonable, I think, to say we want our friends to be somebody that pursues peace. That's somebody that's careful about the way they talk. That somebody's careful about the way they treat other people. I want people to say things that don't bring me down. I want my friends to be somebody that builds me up. Ephesians 4 and verse 29, as you look in that text there, Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 29, it says, "Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for edification, according to the need of the moment, so that it will give grace to those who hear." That's the kind of friend I want. That's how I want a friend to talk to me. Don't tear me down. That's not a friend. That's not a pursuer of peace. I want somebody to build me up. Made me feel good. Not unrealistic. I want somebody to tell me, "Oh, you look great, Corey." Don't give me something unrealistic. Only Christina can give me that. Okay? But build me up. Don't tear me down. You know, some of us have chosen friends that tear us down. And we need to be cognizant of those friends and be sure they're pursuers of peace. I want some friends that'll help sometimes too. I want some friends that are going to help in times of need. You know, we think back to our text in 2 Samuel 13. Amnon, he really needed a friend to grab him by the arm and say, "We're going on a trip. You need to get out of here." He didn't get a friend like that, though. He didn't get what he needed. It's not a friend, somebody that helps you do wrong. A friend is someone who helps you do what's right. And they don't really care whether or not it's popular or not. Galatians chapter 6. The first two verses there, "Brethren, if anyone is caught in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, each one looking to yourself, so that you too will not be tempted. Bear one another's burdens, thereby fulfill the law of Christ." Now that's talking about one who is spiritual. The context there is so rich in what that is. But nonetheless, I just want you to notice this. It's not somebody that's there wallowing in the mud with the person who's got burdens and bringing them down further. It's restoring them. It's building up others. It's somebody that helps in a time of need. And I at least want a friend who's going to be willing to help me. A friend that is willing to give that positive note that sometimes we so desperately need. And a friend, I believe, is someone that you can trust. If you're looking for a good friend, I want to have no doubt that I can trust that friend. Let's look at these two passages in Proverbs quickly. Proverbs 16 and verse 28 says, "A perverse man spreads strife, and a slanderer separates intimate friends." I can't trust somebody like that. A slanderer is going to separate. And chapter 17 and verse 9 says, "He who conceals a transgression seeks love, but he who repeats a matter separates intimate friends." I need to be able to trust my friends. I need to be able to trust a friend to forgive me when I ask, because I'm going to mess up. I'm going to make mistakes. They're going to make mistakes. But I want them to be willing to forgive me. And I want my friends to be able to help me through even when times are tough. That's what a true friend really is. Not someone who shows and reminds you and talks about all the times that you did all those bad things. That's not a friend. That's not somebody I can trust. That's not someone that I can count on. I'm not perfect. But if my friends go around telling everybody all the bad things that I've done, I don't know that I'm going to count that as a friend. That's going to separate intimate friends. And so we see this is just what I think a good friend might be. And so you might be saying, well, that's who a friend is. Someone who respects God. Someone who respects you. Someone who respects themselves. Someone who pursues peace. Someone that's going to help you in times of need. Someone that you can truly put your trust upon. That might be a good friend. But we know who a good friend is and who's our inner circle. But how are you going to pick friends then? How are you going to select friends and make friends? I think Matthew chapter 7, verse 12 is it. I've highlighted it in my Bible. Treat other people the way you want to be treated. Simple. If I'm going to want friends like this, you know what? I got to respect God. If I want a friend who respects God, I better start by looking in the mirror and being sure that I respect God. If I want a friend that respects you, I better start respecting you. I better start respecting myself. I better start being peaceable. I better start being someone who helps others in need. And someone that I can trust. I want to have a friend as someone that they can trust. I better be somebody that they can trust. I can't control others, but you know what? I can control myself. You want to talk about solving the problem of friendship? The problem of friendship starts when we look in the mirror at ourselves. We fix this person, and then we look for friends like that. There's no better rule for making friends than simply this that Jesus says there in that text. It's not going to alienate people to treat them as you wish to be treated. Sometimes we think that it is. If we treat people the way that we want to be treated, it's going to alienate them. They're not going to be friendly anymore. I don't believe that at all. I think it'll make you sympathetic, kind, even helpful. And if you want a friend like this, then you need to be a friend like this. Maybe just ask yourself this question. If I was someone else, would I want to be my friend? And answer that for yourself. Look over in John chapter 15 as we bring our lesson to a close. John chapter 15. Being a faithful Christian is about setting up an environment for success. Setting up a situation where you are in the best place to do what God would have you to do. And the most influential part of your environment are the people who you let to be in your environment. So simply this, choose wisely. Because they're going to have the most influence on you. Here in John chapter 15, beginning in verse 13, it says, "Greater love hath no one than this, than to lay down his life for his friends. You are my friends if you do what I have commanded you." Have you found a friend in Jesus? He's everything to me. He's the most important, the most loving, and the most beneficial even friend that you'll ever have. But you've got to decide that you're going to seek a friendship with him. Just acknowledge his sacrifice, his message to life. Obey what he would have us to do. And then once you've done that, seek to surround yourself with friends of that nature. If we can help you in your service to God this morning, please let us know as we stand together and as we sing.